Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Community colleges can be go-to places for career training. What are some interesting options? And because the guy I'm going to be asking that of is a community college president, I'm going to ask him what it's really like to be a community college president. With me in the studio is Ron Kraft. He's now in his third college presidency, so he's got a bit of a track record and experience. He's currently at Napa Valley College. Previously, for 12 years, was on a community college governing board. And he himself is a first-generation college student. Ron Kraft, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you, Marty. It's great to be here.
Pleasure. So, let's this show's supposed to be how it works. Let's focus right on the career thing. What is a career preparation program? Not a transfer program to UC or whatever, but a specific program where you go to this training program at Napa Valley College and you come out with a reasonable chance of a reasonably remunerative job.
Thanks for the question. A couple quick maybe primers here.
Sure.
A big difference between training and education.
Okay, right.
So if we really focus on training, Napa Valley College has a couple that I'd like to mention. First is our...
By the way, let's explain the difference. Yeah. I mean, education is like, you know, you can take a philosophy course and that's going to make you educar, to lead you forward.
Right.
Into, you know, but we're talking here specifically, because the show focuses on career, on more specific career training.
Exactly. Practical, pointed,
yeah.
And the evidence is you get a job when you either get your certificate or you graduate.
Precisely.
Because we're in the heart of Napa Valley, you know, one of our key programs and really very successful is the Viticulture and Winery Technology program.
Right.
And it you can really go into that program and in 1 year or 2 years, depending on your focus, get a certificate that will prepare you to work in the industry, in the broad-based winery as a beginning host, or serving wine, or working in the vineyard, or working in the winery itself. Those are three different tracks.
Let me probe you a little bit about that. So, you know, it prepares you for jobs is wording that doesn't speak to the probability. If I am a student in that program, and I don't want to end up, you know, pouring wine, you know, at $10 an hour, I need to be self-sustainable. What is the probability that if I go into that program, I'm going to, maybe not the first 3 months or whatever, but in a year or two, I am launching a career that's going to enable me to make a middle-class living? Do you know?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think like all careers, it really depends on the person going in. So if you have some skill set in terms of communication, your ability to get along with people, you're going to do extraordinarily well on the front end, the customer service side, remembering people's names. That's the hospitality piece. If you're trained and you can have a discussion with those folks, the guests, so to speak, in wine and in the different varietals and drill down, if it will, based on your education, you'll move from, call it $30,000 a year to $50,000 a year as an assistant to $60,000 a year as a maybe a little more marketing to $75,000 a year. And the cap there, I think, for generally is whatever you can do on the sales side. There, we have plenty of people who are graduates who are working in the $70,000 to $90,000 in the Valley.
Does the following, you know, I don't know, does the following make sense? I hear about a term used in the Napa Valley called there's a wine lake. There's a ton of lake. Everybody with an ego who made money in Silicon Valley or Hollywood wants to open a winery, and so he or she doesn't care about profit, so they've got all this wine, and it's all sitting there and selling for dirt cheap, and the recent studies have been kind of embarrassing about the whole wine industry. There was an article in the Huffington Post that wine is BS because they took a bunch of experts, and they gave them, quote, three wines to blind taste, and they were the same wine, and they yet the experts rated them as different. So is this perhaps, like so often in higher education, we prepare people for a career that's late to the game, and that by the time they finish training and moving up past those first few years, they're going to be making $15 an hour again or looking for a job?
I don't think so. I think looking at the broad base, you know, wine is on the upswing worldwide, and the consumption of wine. One of the biggest pieces is China has really opened up, so we have quite a few international students coming over now. By quite a few, I mean 5 or 10, but they're starting to come over in groups. And the fact is that they'll stay and work in the Valley with a career or go back to China. So we're actually finding that our demand curve for our programs is starting to fill up.
There is a person who's sitting here at the other table. She was going to be joining us later, but she's nodding a lot. And so she obviously has something to say, and I know she always has something to say of at least minimal value. So
Thank you so much. I don't want you to go overboard with the compliments.
Yes. Well, after all, it's your birthday. I'd give you at least that much. Anyway, birthday girl, Dr. Barbara Nemco, you're 40 years old. Congratulations.
17.
Right. And so what made you desire to come on the show early and comment on the wine program at Napa Valley College?
Well, one of the major controversies in Napa right now is the expansion of wineries. We have more wineries trying to come in. We have more wineries trying to expand. So although you may think that it's not an expanding industry, it's going crazy in Napa.
Thank you, dear.
You're welcome.
I'm sure the vintners paid you to say that.
But if they'd like to, that would be fine. That's just the reality of what's happening. Every day in the paper, you see an article about it.
Okay, you're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. I'm talking with Ron Kraft. He's the president of Napa Valley College, about career preparation in our community colleges. The best bargain. Nobody can argue with that. Mm-hmm. The best bargain on career preparation, period. No qualifications required. We talked about one example, that is your wine program. What's one more? And we're not going to say focus at the Napa Valley College. I'm going to make you go more broad and talk about where good career prep programs are overall in community college here in the Bay Area. But what's one more program at Napa Valley College that you'd particularly like to spotlight that would help people get a middle-class job without having to transfer to a 4-year or 5-year or 6-year degree, which is what typically is involved?
Mm-hmm. Another one that comes to mind is our psych tech program. It's a 3-semester program. Generally, the people who go into that program have a high school degree, so mm-hmm. they're hitting the ground running. They go through as a cohort, as a group, and progress all that way. It really is that entry level. I'm going to say entry level to the mental health team, but as soon as they get this psych tech certificate, and they are really ready to work. The last two graduation classes that we went through, all 30 students. That day, they're working the next day, all 30. It's 100% graduation.
Where are they working? What are they doing?
Many of them are working at the state hospital across the street
from
Napa Valley College. And the state system has this backlog of open jobs for psych tech. So it's really a guarantee, if you will, in small quotes, of a job if you complete the program. Then it becomes a pathway. A lot of those folks, you know, find out whether they really enjoy that health career, and then they jump to the AS degree program for nursing, or some of them go on to be psychologists. But they can, while they're there, they can make $50,000 in that role.
I'm always liking to ask the question that somebody who's thinking of going into the field might ask because they're worried. Like, when I think about psych techs, mm-hmm. we are in an era in which we have closed most of the mental institutions, and many people are out in the community. And if you're working in Napa Valley College, you're dealing with some pretty hardcore folks. And so is it a real burnout? Is the reason there are so many jobs available because it's such a burnout job dealing with such troubled individuals that it's really not a very rewarding career?
Now, I think what I've seen, at least, is the opposite. Is you really are, I'm just going to say, hardwired. The stories that come out of that group in graduation are generally the stories you would see in community colleges. A tough road, single parents, they're working hard, they've turned their life around somehow, they really want to give back. So there's a social justice, if you will, piece of that, and they're really excited about jumping in and helping.
Okay. So let's turn now to the issue of, you are the president of a college. Everybody has, most people go to college, never even think about the president, I don't even know if he exists. And yet it obviously is a fairly important, interesting role. And we have a semi-regular segment on the show called What's It Really Like to Be A? And we've done everybody from prostitutes to psychiatrists. So what really was one thing that might really surprise me about being a community college president?
Well, I would say, I'm not sure it would surprise you because I'm not sure much does. But I would say that generally speaking, the pathway to being a community college president is dramatically different than it has been.
Tell me.
Over the years. So, you know, I went to a community college and graduated in the 70s. Mm-hmm. The community college president at that time was traditionally a faculty member who had worked for a few years onto administration in the same community college, at the same community college, then a vice president, mm-hmm. their time in due, and then a president. Mm-hmm. Now, that's almost unobtainable. There's mm-hmm. very few examples of that because you're not prepared. So the complex nature of a president's job is politician, business person, labor relations unit person, operational manager, academic expert, legal expert, you know, on and on. So it's much more of a requirement to address maybe 20 different topics in a day, and you just simply have to have that broad base of expertise.
Love the answer. It's really good. Now let's flesh that out. Let's take a day in life. You said 20 different things in a day. Walk me through – it doesn't have to be a particular because I'm sure there are boring parts of every day, but walk me through what a day might look like where you're wearing many of those hats.
Okay. Every day is different. Even the days that are similar are different because of the people. It's a people business. So generally speaking, 85% of the issues that are going to come before a president are going to be people related.
Like, give me one example.
Well, it would be a good example is in California we have AB 1725, which is a shared governance law, which means that faculty by law and other stakeholders at the college have a place in participatory governance at the table. So generally speaking, if you want to make a decision, it's got to be vetted out through the system, through the college. Inquiries have to go in there. So a day may start where I'm having an appointment with a faculty member or two, a leader, asking them their opinion about a potential planning issue that I want to do or the board would like to do. And so nuancing that piece. Later in the day, I can keep going on. It could be a meeting with an attorney regarding a complaint from a student who's had a discipline issue. Later in the day is a meeting with the instruction side for new curriculum. In the afternoon, I'm presenting to Rotary. And later in the afternoon, I may be meeting with the board members in preparation for upcoming board meeting. Meanwhile, interspersed with phone calls and emails and all those things that keep your day rolling.
So reading between the lines, mm-hmm. it sounds like while one would viscerally think that college president has huge power, in a sense your behavior is so mandated by responsibility. You mentioned the board. You mentioned the faculty senate. I'm sure there are laws that are involved mm-hmm. that you have to. And when there's any question even about a law, there is a lawyer on the phone. And then you've got the disgruntled parent. Is it fair to say that maybe one of the most surprising things about being college president, how little power you have?
I would say that, you know, based on where in my experience, that I wouldn't say that we have any power. It's not really a power equation. You know, it's about influence. And about staying ahead of the curve in terms of shaping the influence in the institution.
Where do you have influence and where don't you?
Well, depending on what kind of a leader you are, that can ebb and wane.
How about you? I'm talking about Ron Kraft.
Oh, me personally?
Yep.
Where do I have influence and where I don't? Certainly, my background in coming to this position is a little varied. I mean, we talked about it earlier. I've been in business. I've been a faculty member. I've been a board member. I have been a teacher, et cetera. So in terms of the influence, I think I have influence at least with the faculty because I've been behind that role for so long. So if I'm talking about curriculum or issues in the classroom, I certainly can have that credence. So I have a bit of that background. In terms of my influence with the board, I think I work closely with the board of trustees. And having served 12 years on a board myself, I have some ability to understand their perspective, which is the real key for a leader, and especially in my position. It's what I call a 360 analysis, which really means I have to think about all the stakeholders in every single decision every time.
Every human being should. You know, in everything, whether you're a clerk or you're a CEO, the more we can live our life, you know, in that cosmic sense, we look at all the stakeholders. That's really good. Now, where do you feel that you don't have much influence and wish you could?
Well, that's a really – actually a fabulous question, you know. And the operational side of a community college president can really eat you up. you know, getting sucked into the operational vortex of
what's
just,
that mean? What's operational? What does that mean?
It really means the day-to-day contractual running. If you thought of the college as a T-square, on the left-hand side is the business of running a big institution with a $50 million budget, hundreds of employees, and lots of students who are the customer base. All those people have to be satisfied. On the other side is the curriculum, what we offer, the product. And then there's another even piece of that, which is the community. So part of what I struggle with is this balance between answering the 100 emails that are from internal stakeholders, keeping ahead of the curve to work with the community, which is really where leadership happens, and encouraging the community and listening to the community. What should we be offering? Those things. That's the delicate balance.
What would seem most mystical would be the operations piece. Again, I like to try to find a window that into your career, your job, that the public wouldn't see. Tell me about the kind of operational, you say that's an area you're frustrated that you don't have more influence over. Tell me about an important operational issue that needs to be, that gets grappled with, that you wish you had more power over.
Oh, that's easy. Technology. The IT world is so complex. Used to be easy. Most colleges 20 years ago had one software that ran the whole college. That is still the case. And that really means that we're 20 years behind the curve. Very few colleges are using the cloud-based, web-based software effectively. So when you really think about the complex nature of what we do operationally, we have hundreds of thousands of transactions literally every semester with students who are enrolling, disenrolling, looking. Then we have the scheduling side, what rooms, what teachers, what hours. All of that IT is dependent on IT. We're always behind the curve on IT. So it's frustration, I think, operationally for the president, who in some ways is always looking in the rearview mirror with IT. You know, I'm addressing the problems that occurred yesterday and trying to fix those rather than being able to get ahead of that curve. That's difficult.
I always think of, you know, I don't know if you know this. I have been a consultant to 15 college presidents, no community college presidents. But I know that most of the college presidents that I focused on obsess about fundraising, mm-hmm. whether that's with the government in lobbying mm-hmm. through their organization or by themselves, through fat cat donors or whatever. Community colleges are different. Because your student base isn't as rich generally and they don't have a lot of dollars, and more of the money I would think is kind of preordained. But to what extent is bringing in the dollars – you said you have a business background. To what extent is bringing the dollars in part of your job description?
It is a very important part and critical. Generally speaking, depending on where your college is located, for our college, which is rural, a bit underfunded – we're always going to be 20 to 25% short operationally. So that means that – and this ebbs and flows depending on the enrollment. It really means that it's the community college's president, my job, to go out and connect with our foundation, get income if we can get it, get revenue, get foundation gifts to help support. A lot of that comes through student scholarships.
Let's say I said to you, let's say I am the president of a foundation. So mm-hmm. the Gasser Foundation is a local foundation mm-hmm. in Napa. And I want to kind of, again, get us really as into this as we can. Mm-hmm. I am the Gasser Foundation. And let's say I have granted you an audience with me. Everybody's pitching me for money, and you're pitching me for money too. What's your pitch?
Because of my background and my leadership training, I can tell you the worst pitch. It's not going to be... here I am, the community college, my hand is extended, palm up. That is not going to sell and shouldn't sell. What the pitch would be is we are a piece of this community. How can we best collaborate? How can the college assist you in your goal? And how can you assist us in our goal?
Great. So if I then, that's a great answer. So if I'm Gasser and I say, okay, make a proposal. You know something about the Gasser Foundation. You know something about the college. You know something about the community. What's a proposal in which we could collaborate? What would really Ron Kraft, you know, mm-hmm. in, you know, that you would think this would be the legacy you would love to leave? What would be the big initiative? You said you have a special interest in curriculum. Mm-hmm. What would be the initiative, perhaps curricular initiative, that would make Ron Kraft excited about proposing it to the Gasser Foundation?
I'll draw three different dots together. One is Napa Valley is a very isolated area, difficult to get to in some ways, which is the beauty of it. It has a relatively small landmass with very few housing opportunities. The college is really blessed with a lot of acreage that has been undeveloped or previously just surplus on our main campus. Gasser's main push is about affordable housing, working class housing. How can we support the citizens and workers of Napa Valley so we don't have this huge transit? And the third piece,
where people are commuting from Vallejo to get to Napa.
To get there.
Right, okay.
And looking at the kind of trend in California and other states, many colleges are using their surplus land for community housing, affordable housing for their faculty, staff, and students. Not just the old student resident hall kind of aspect, which is
you mean
partially
get drunk, get laid, go to the ball game.
Well, it could. Okay. the other option is really for faculty and staff, which cannot afford to live in Napa Valley. Mm-hmm. They could, however, afford to live in a college collaborative relationship between Gasser and the college.
And so, for students, I mean, what better than living among the faculty? That's where real growth could occur. Everybody wins.
Yes. And let me just tie this programmatic piece. Having a campus village, so to speak, on campus would be a fabulous piece. Programmatically, that village needs support. And some of our programmatic and hospitality is event planning, hotel management, which is in the valley, culinary background and programming pieces. So we could link closely our programs inside the college to help serve that village that would be then on campus in a very seamless way. Gasser wins, the community wins, and the college wins.
You're listening to Work with Marty Nemko. My guest is Ron Kraft, the president of Napa Valley College, and quite visionary. He's actually put a smile on this cynical Marty Nemko's face. But now I'd like you to give a call if you have a question about either using a career college for your career preparation or are just curious about something about what it's really like to be a college president. Phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. 4134. Another element of the being a college president, I think, is most crucial. It's running any business or a nonprofit is the most important thing you can ever do in any leadership position is hiring well. And to what extent, you talked about having relatively little power about so many things. To what extent do you, as the president, have power to hire the very best people meritocratically?
Yeah, a good question. There is a very specific pathway in the community college world for recruiting, outreach, hiring, search committee, the interview process. The key there, I think, for us moving forward as a college is to have as many of those procedures and policies kind of nailed down so it's not open to interpretation of individual search committees, but the college starts to understand the template of the policies and procedures. Let me say something that's, I think, more important, though, and that's overlaid the hiring process. What's the vision? What kind of folks are you really trying to attract to the college?
Is there really a question about that? I mean, everybody wants somebody who's smart, driven, low maintenance, team player, yet an individual contributor who can take bold initiative. I mean, isn't that the kind of crap that we normally hear about mission statements that are unobjectionable?
Sure. I mean, those are all good things. So, and if I suppose I was on a trip to Mars, that would be the crew that I would like. The interesting piece about a large institution like a community college is it's a very disparate group of individuals. So a faculty profile in chemistry is going to be quite different than the faculty profile in culinary arts. And so even though there is the strength of depth, one of the issues that we struggle with in the community college is a subject matter master's. So to work in the field and the academic side, you can't have a generalist degree. You have to have a very specific degree. So what that does is narrow the funnel of potential recruits.
I hate that.
To a trickle.
I hate that.
If you're in Orange County and you're surrounded by 7 million people, you're going to have a pool of candidates of 100. If you're in Northern California and an area like ours, which is harder, you're going to have five candidates.
You've just raised the issue that I have perhaps the biggest problem with higher education in general, that the primacy of being a subject matter expert is critical to hiring people who are teaching undergraduates. That seems particularly, and I'm literally going to use the word stupid, in the case of community colleges, where it is elitist to assert that someone needs a PhD in mathematics, understanding three-dimensional topography, in order to teach that what really every college student, every high school student should know and doesn't, that is the ability to estimate, the ability to mathematically reason, and they're so busy teaching linear algebra. So if I were the college president, to the extent to which I had power and I was not constrained externally, I would want to have teachers who were not natural-born mathematical experts, but somebody who had the gift of transforming undergraduates so they understand the basics. Those PhDs very often are self-selected and trained to be in la-la land of esoterica and arcana. And do you think I'm wrong?
Of course.
So everybody join the club.
What I would say, there's a couple pieces there. You really do need a wonderfully skilled and trained faculty, which we have. And I'm not just saying that we work very hard at combing through to get somebody who's very educated in the subject. The skill, the art of teaching is quite a different piece.
That's the piece, though, isn't
it? Yeah. And I think you would find most in agreement that community college, that slice of community college, we excel at teaching. That's what we look for. Versus the research piece.
I'd be remiss if I didn't go back to the earlier question. I wanted to get beyond Napa Valley College. Mm-hmm. I am a listener. I like the idea of $12 a semester, $12 a unit. Mm-hmm. I want career prep. Mm-hmm. I don't have time to go back to school for a zillion years. Mm-hmm. I'm not interested in Napa Valley College anymore for the moment. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in Bay Area wide. Is there a career prep program or two that you would particularly like to point our listeners to?
Sure. If I were out there and exploring and open, there's a couple that come to mind. Santa Rosa JC is our neighbor.
Right.
Great school. Offers a whole technology and automotive. Unbelievable. I grabbed one just out of my mind here in diesel technology. So diesel mechanic, that program is three semesters, start to finish. You can earn as a diesel mechanic. A, you're going to get a job right away.
Yep.
The demand is way up there.
Yep.
$100,000 is not unusual.
Wow.
with overtime.
Wow.
But you could probably assume that you're going to be hired in at 70. We have a neighbor who's the Napa Airport. They cannot find anybody to work on planes anymore because the automotive industry pays double what the aeronautic industry pays.
I love it. And so, it makes so much sense to me because ever more people are not going to the mall. They're going to Amazon. Mm-hmm. And every one of those Amazon products needs to be delivered. And all this big box stores. So there's all this that's getting delivered by trains with their engines, mm-hmm. and diesel engines that are truck engines. So that makes sense. Tell me about one more program not offered at Napa Valley College that is a nice pipeline to a rewarding career.
10 months and done. Marin College, dental assisting. 10 months and you're done. You go from zero, not knowing anything in the program. You're a couple semesters. You're really ready now to assist in a dental office. And there's pieces of this, Marty, that are really important. So when you really look at that struggling, I'm just going to use our typical kind of community, tough. It's been tough. They're really looking for a new career. Well, in 10 months, right, you're in scrubs, you're in a professional situation, you're driving to work surrounded by other professions who are going to inspire you to work your way up to dental hygienist, to maybe dental school, or all the other pieces there. It's a great career, and generally speaking, if you're on a Board of Governors waiver, which means that you're not paying anything for community college,
wow.
You can get through that program and be off and running for a great career in 10 months.
What is this board? I've never heard of Board of Governors waivers.
The community college system in California has a Board of Governors, like the larger group that are appointed by the governor to oversee. And they created a waiver system which is if you cannot afford and meet certain criteria to attend community college, you can apply for a waiver, which means that you don't pay tuition. Napa Valley College, for example, along with many colleges, 60% of our students are on board of
you got to be kidding. 60% of – as if $12 a unit isn't cheap enough, you can go for free?
$48 a unit now, but it's been a few years. But absolutely, yes.
Whoa. Okay, this is gold. Can I go to the well one more time?
Sure.
Is there one more career prep program that is not offered at Napa Valley College but is offered at some Bay Area college, community college, that you would particularly want to point my listeners to?
There's a couple in the Bay Area. Again, I'm going to go back to health science. Respiratory therapy.
Right, good point.
Really strong. It was an unknown field.
Foothill College, I know, has a premier program in it.
Exactly. And they just did a couple great things, which is respiratory therapy used to be a certificate program, you know, a couple units adding up to 12 or 15 for the program. Then it went to an AA degree.
They always do that.
Now they're offering a bachelor's degree in respiratory therapy.
Offering, I would say, is subjecting kids to unnecessary amount of coursework, but I'll digress. I won't digress. Continue.
So the reality there is that because of the aging of the baby boomers, bless their hearts, and the general health care piece, respiratory therapists are being gobbled up by hospitals who would rather see that healthcare team have one of these lesser paid but good well paid people in the healthcare field on site who can then handle some of those cases as they kind of work through the hospitals or the daycare pieces or even in the short term care pieces.
Okay. I'm going to go one more time to the well. Has you got one more for me off the top of your head or no?
Sure. I would say that not only our college, but many colleges offer welding. Mm. It has been traditionally a male-dominated field, but I have seen, and we do have many more women now entering that field as well. There is a testing procedure that kind of precedes this at the end of it, which is, for lack of our conversation here, if you can weld a really nice seam and pass the certification, you're certified as a welder. Literally, when they finish that seam at the very end, they drop that torch and walk out to the car and go to their $75 an hour job.
Whoa.
And that is 100% filled. It's a seasonal job as the economy goes up and down. But generally, when it's good, it's very good.
Great. Now I want to spend the last few minutes. First of all, I'll let our listeners know, you're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. I'm talking with Ron Kraft. He's the president of Napa Valley College, both about how some of the smarter career prep training programs that exist not just in Napa Valley College but in the Bay Area, but also because I like to focus on what it's really like to be have never done a college president. So we're doing that. I want to spend the last few minutes talking about that. The average tenure of a college president is just 3 years. Why?
Constituencies. One, to get to the requirement for the basic requirements for a community college president are so steep now. You know, two or three pages of desired quals, preferred quals, degrees, etc. That you're dealing with a very small group. It's very difficult to get to a community college presidency before you are late 50s or 60, which is the really sweet spot. To get in there. That means that you have, you may have 10 or even, you know, in my case, you know, 20 years to work, you know. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that the constituencies are very demanding for community college presidents. Mm-hmm. So unless you have a strong internal vision for the college you are at, it looks like this. Year one, you're hired. It's all good. It's a honeymoon. Year two, people are scratching their heads, figuring out whether or not this is going to work. Year three, a new opening comes up at another college, and you get to start all over again. Mm. So many colleges will have this revolving door. Mm-hmm. And what that does is stop initiatives, curriculum, program, foundation, fundraising, and they start all over again. So one of the most important things, I think, for California – for constituencies to hear is it the most important factor in a successful college is longevity in terms of its senior leadership team, because you can actually form and work with teachers, faculty, other people over a period of time.
What I don't understand is that you say how primary the vision thing is. I mean, it seems like every college president has a pretty similar vision. They want to include the community. They want to create opportunities. They want to raise more money. They have this idea whether it's to build a theater or to build a welding program or to build a convention. How important really is the vision thing?
Well, I think it's critical.
What's your vision for Napa Valley College?
Well, my vision for Napa Valley College is to make it self-sustaining, is to recognize that we cannot survive solely on state or local fees to support it. So I've talked to our board and the community of being good stewards of what we have. We have great land, great possibilities to develop, good programs to develop. The other piece is to make sure that we are the first choice. This is part of my vision for the Valley. I believe that every student in the entire Napa Valley should be coming to Napa Valley College for some either a short-term cert, which is called a LUC, low unit, 3 units, 6 classes, whatever, all the way through a transfer.
What keeps it from being that now?
I think the old tapes, they're getting there. When I went to school, they were JCs, and there are still a few who call themselves that, junior colleges. But it was a second choice. I think if you really had your stuff together, you'd go to a 4-year. Well, that's flipped. Now the second tier, in my view, the second tier colleges and universities are 4-year universities, and the last choice should be a research college and
Why?
University. Because if you're thinking, if you would envision a funnel, you're really talking about a funnel that's upside down. There are so few folks who can gainfully work through a long-term system to a PhD that it's great, but the community college is the right side funnel. It really allows many people to work their way in to some level of the system.
I'm going to say it a different way, and you tell me if you buy it.
Sure.
I like community colleges because they represent the right balance of education, that is, for citizenship, connoisseurship of life, etc., and career preparation. And the hiring criteria for faculty reflect that balance, unlike at research universities, in which are 98% driven by research dollars, and how likely is this faculty member to do cutting-edge research and bring in research dollars. And the cost differential is bizarrely different. And so it's only an idiot who would go to a research university, even if he or she were very bright, for the first 2 years, because there are honors programs and plenty of opportunity to get rigor at that community college. The idea of residence hall life is overrated, and so some of the smartest things you could do, even if you're an A student, would be to get your general education courses taught by the people who are more likely to be transformative, who are teaching at a community college, and then make your transfer. Do you buy my analysis?
Pieces, yes. Yeah, I might use slightly different language. I would say...
Yeah, you're a college president. You're supposed to be politic.
There you go.
That's not me.
I would say that financially, it's so powerful. No matter whether you're a millionaire or a thousandaire, you know, why would you spend $50,000 a year...
Image.
Or not, right, for your first 2 years? Now, I have found in talking with... parents and other community folks that the community college is now becoming a first choice. It just makes sense.
It does.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't let you. I know, Barbara. Do you have something you really want to say? Okay, go ahead, Barbara. Barbara Nemko, you're just joining us, my wife, Dr. Barbara Nemko. Go ahead.
The other piece that I think we can't emphasize enough is that the teaching at community college is so much better because all these great researchers are spending so much time on that, which you mentioned. But what we don't think about is if they're spending all that time on getting research dollars, they're not doing the preparation to be a fabulous teacher.
Fair point. Okay. I love being tough but fair. So I'm going to say I want to focus on the negative. It's really easy to talk about visions and whatever. You know, nobody's perfect. When you put your head on the pillow every night, what does Ron Kraft say? Damn it, I'm really not that good at X. I got to get better at X. What is it?
As well as I think and good as I think I communicate, you constantly beat myself up for not touching enough folks. So part of my job really is not only returning emails, but staying ahead in a, you know, I'll go back to this visionary piece. People, whether they're at the community college, faculty, staff, students, really need to understand and buy into, if you will, this future vision. It's very hard to crystallize a vision for a lot of different stakeholders who have different needs. So when I put – what I really lose sleep about is, am I providing enough drive to make a difference in the legacy of this college?
Ron, the piece of this interview that I'll remember the most where you were most impressive was the role play we did with Gasser. I think in terms of a big vision, the idea of taking that enormous amount of land that Napa Valley College happens to have, and with one – we're killing so many birds with one stone. You're providing practical opportunities for your hospitality and other people to work. You're providing a living learning opportunity for faculty and students. You're providing an affordable housing so you can attract better people. I think that is a brilliant vision that one could – almost is unobjectionable. What's your reaction?
Thank you. I really like that, and I think as a legacy piece – both the board, Gasser Foundation, and the college would be really well served. What it takes in education is if we were to flip that switch and everybody was in agreement today, in 5 years from now we can realize that version. And that's good enough.
And you were more than good enough as a guest on Work with Marty and Emco. I appreciate you very much being there. Ron Kraft is the president of Napa Valley College. A school – I spent a lot of time in Napa. I live there part of the time, and I have heard lots of great things. It is big enough to offer lots of choices, small enough to be personal, in a lovely, safe environment, which is something we can't say necessarily about all colleges. So I at least commend it to you to investigate, whether it be for a career prep program or transfer program. Ron Kraft, thanks very much again.
Thank you, Marty.
Barbara Nemco, now you're center stage. There have been a series of letters that I and you have gotten – from listeners to the show, readers to my writing or whatever, that I thought, you know, we always take calls, but I thought it would be very valuable to supplement that. Sometimes when people write, they can be a little more articulate about what they have to say. And I've actually adapted them. I've kind of created composites. But I do want to give out the phone number. If you or someone you care about has got a work problem, we do something called workovers. In which I can usually help you take at least a baby step forward. So this is the time to call. Phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. You get two for the price of 1-415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. All right, Barbara, do you want to start by reading one of those letters? I'll take a shot at an answer, and then I'd like you to get the last word and give a rejoinder of some sort where you'd agree, disagree, amplify.
Okay, this is a sad one. Dear Marty, I've been staring at the walls of my home for the last 3 days. After 26 years working for the same big prestigious nonprofit, working my way up to assistant development director, they laid me off and immediately replaced me with someone younger, citing, quote, a need for a different skill set. I may not have been the smartest, most tech-savvy, or hardest working employee. After all, I'm 53 now. But I still do a good job, and doesn't my loyalty count for something? I've given them the best years of my life. They've eaten the apple and thrown away the core. That happened 4 months ago. I have a mortgage, 2 kids in private school, because the public schools where we live really are aimed at low-achieving kids. And soon, even though I keep hearing how college may not be worth the money, I know I'll soon have to be paying for them to go to college. Community college, that'll save you money. My wife brings in a little money with her part-time job, but I gotta get a 6-figure job and fast or I'll lose our house. When I first got laid off, I immediately contacted everyone I knew and asked for leads. And while everyone was nice and I got a couple of leads, none of them went anywhere. I've answered what must be 50 ads, and I never even get a rejection letter from most of them. I've gotten 3 interviews, including once when I made it to the second round, but no job offer. I'm terrified. I can't sleep at night. All I can think about is that we'll lose our home. I have 6 months more of savings, which I'm using to pay the mortgage. After that, I'll have to go into default. On top of that, I still have a student loan I'm paying off for my master's in nonprofit management, even if I declare bankruptcy. I can't get that written off. It's the only loan that can't get discharged through bankruptcy. Until now, I've suppressed my fears and just put one foot in front of the other. But 3 days ago, I faced the likely reality that I'm in real trouble permanently. So I can't make myself do any more job searching. And as I said, I've been basically staring at the walls for 3 days. My wife is constantly nagging me to keep looking, and I know I should. Oh, and my blood pressure's up. I've even started praying again, but it doesn't seem to help calm me down, let alone get me a job. Whatever happened to a loving God? What do I do? Please help me. I'm very scared. Sincerely, terrified Timothy.
That's a hard one. Of course, that letter makes me sad. And of course, that phrase is very memorable. That phrase he used, I know, I think comes from Death of a Salesman. He ate the apple and threw away the core. It's pretty powerful. Unfortunately, businesses, including nonprofits, which are businesses, and you know, we can label them nonprofits, more of a accounting term, believe they have to have the best people they can hire, even if they're still somebody good. If they can get somebody cheaper, and usually younger people are cheaper, many good people get tossed aside. But okay, moving forward, you said you worked for a big, prestigious nonprofit. Well, society values prestige a lot, so I'm wondering if you've done a thorough job search of less competitive nonprofits. They might appreciate someone who spent 26 years working their way up in a prestigious nonprofit. You probably, I'm sure, learned a lot of best practices because you're getting generally higher level people there. And a thorough search means not the drips and drab search that most people make, but like contacting 10 or 20 smaller nonprofits whose mission you believe in, and then writing an honest, thoughtful letter to their director of development, or if they don't have one, their executive director, asking if he or she might be willing to meet with you and offer you some advice on where you might turn, or maybe there's a way you might be helpful to them. Even if it's only on a project basis, that'll get you in the door. You know, they often say if you ask for a job, they'll give you advice because they're feeling too much pressured. But if you ask for advice, it opens the door for them giving you a job. And if that failed, I think you need to think of it at least. It may not be true, but it may be true. You need to think of it at least as ultimately for the best. It's going to give you an opportunity to consider something new. Maybe you want to, maybe with a partner, start a business. For example, some people have left their job to buy some rundown cafe for a song, and then they upgrade it, they add entertainment, whatever. Others have started a business selling on eBay or Amazon. Others became consultants in their area of expertise. Like, you've been assistant director of fundraising for a large nonprofit. Might you do some consulting in whatever it is you are best at? Like maybe setting up funding databases. Ron Kraft was talking about the IT piece always being behind the curve. So if you're an expert at setting up fundraising database, remember that raising money is the lifeblood of any organization. Maybe you're an expert at planning donor events. That's another big cash way to bring money in. Like those, maybe those fancy donor auctions that are a pain in the butt to put on but can bring in big dollars. Or maybe planned giving. There are fat cats organizations. Doing planned giving is another way to ensure the long-term viability. You need to, if you're an expert at, what are those called, trusts and charitable remainder trusts. That's what colleges use all the time. Those are the things that could get you hired. So, of course, marriage is a partnership. And especially at this time, is your wife doing all she can to bring in the money? And should you, to be honest, should you pull your kids from private school? That's a big cost item, and maybe it's a good lesson for your kids to learn that when daddy or mommy is having economic problems, they don't have the right to a private school. And in many cases, a carefully chosen public school can be as good or better. Importantly, even though you're desperate for money, you do need to allow plenty of time for breaks during your day to nurture, this may sound airy-fairy, but nurture your soul. I mean, whether you're going to pet dogs at the pound or take hikes in the wilderness or play with your kids or doing something creative like sing, paint, get involved in community theater like Barbara is, even though she's superintendent of school, she's in the college production of Guys and Dolls and loving it, and it is totally exciting and invigorating to one's life. Not only is that going to be healthy, it's going to keep you from seeming burned out or desperate when you're speaking with prospective employers. So while that your letter was like amazingly depressing as I was reading it, but when you really think about it, there is hope for almost anybody, and I hope that somewhere in this, in my ever too passionate words, there is at least some practical advice. Barbara Nemko, where do you agree, disagree, or amplify?
Well, my first thought is, he says, after all, I'm 53. I'm sorry, 53 is a kid. You can have 20 years of work ahead of you. If you walk in with your head down because I'm 53, then it's going to be harder to get a job. But if you walk in and I'm only 53, it's just a whole different attitude. The point of being not tech savvy, I would say that's an area where you need to do some learning, because very often nonprofits are using antiquated databases, and that's why they're not bringing in the money. They're not keeping track well of who's giving and who isn't giving and how much they're giving and how often you can approach them. There are newer databases that do a fabulous job of keeping track, and what you can offer this new lower-level nonprofit is your newfound skills in what you would use if you took over some of the fundraising piece. I absolutely support the idea of kids in public school. You have to look and see what options there are in your public schools. If you were in Napa Valley, you could choose to put your kids in a dual immersion bilingual program where they would graduate fully bilingual and bicultural in Spanish, which will be a great help for them in getting a job. There are all kinds of career programs that we have in our high schools. We have culinary. We have automated manufacturing. We have biotechnology.
We have New Tech High School, which is considered a national model,
where they grab the kids before they even graduate. They really want to hire them. And those kids do better than kids who go to prestigious private schools on the California Work Readiness Assessment.
I want you to read another letter and we'll discuss it, but let's go to the phones. Let's take a call. Welcome to Work with Marty Namco and Barbara Namco. What's on your mind? How can I help?
Are you talking to me?
I am.
Oh, great. I'm a psychologist, and I was just listening to the email that you were just responding to, and I don't remember if the person said that they had been getting unemployment.
It wasn't mentioned.
Yeah, that would be one thing, to just make sure that they have that. And
fair
then
point.
The other thing is, if they're sitting staring at a wall for 3 days and their blood pressure's up, it may be another option to actually meet with a psychologist about the stress they're under, and they may be able to get some temporary California state disability that would bring in income and give them a chance to really get them, you know, some support and help with some work on their blood pressure and a little bit less stress while they're searching and trying to take their next step. So I just wanted to make sure they were aware of those two ways to bring in. They can't do both at the same time.
Fair enough. But thank you very much for the call. Barbara, you look like you wanted to say something, or no?
I agree with her. I also wanted to support what you said. Marriage is a partnership. A wife with a part-time job. Now, obviously, the kids are old enough that he's thinking about them going to college. They don't need a stay-at-home mom. Mom ought to be out getting a full-time job.
Yeah. The stress reduction, I'm really convinced. I'm going to do a little one-minute lecture on stress reduction before I run to the psychologist. He doesn't have any money. Psychologists ain't cheap. The things that are known to be stress reductions are the kind of hobbies, things that I mentioned, are creative outlets. Hiking and exercise is a known stress reducer. Deep breathing is a known stress reducer. Keeping, in my mind, the greatest stress reducer, keeping one foot in front of the other, not looking ahead, not catastrophizing, saying, what in the next moment should I do? That keeps the problem manageable. It's what do you need to do for the next second? So that's what I would do first before I applied for disability or went and saw a shrink. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And if he was part of any kind of a union group, there may be some employee assistance program where you can even talk to someone over the phone. You can get an in-person interview at no cost, and then over months you can talk on the phone. So I would check into what related benefits he can get from his previous job.
Great. We've only got 5 minutes left. Why don't you read one more of those stories? That's a letter, an email, composite letter from listeners. You got a bunch of them there. So pick
I do. I'm going to choose the one, a letter from a divorcing person who loses by making money.
Okay.
Dear Marty, for the past few months, I've been working as a fundraising telemarketer for my alma mater. They hire alumni to call potential donors. I like it because even though it just pays $10 an hour, I can work from home and it's low stress. It's fun trying to convert someone who's annoyed you're calling them at dinner time into someone who donates. Well, she's lucky they stay on the phone. My spouse has just initiated divorce proceedings, and my lawyer advises me to stay in my current job because if I'm not making much money, I'll get more spousal support. But that feels risky. Not to mention unethical, in my view. She tells me that the contentious divorce can drag on for years. If I end up not getting a fat settlement, I'll need to start making a good income. And at age 30, if I've spent more years doing this slacker job, it'll be even harder to get an employer to hire me at a good salary. What should I do? And, assuming I should try to get a better paying job, do you have any suggestions for what I might consider? I'm very social, but also love reading and movies. I'm not technical and a bit math phobic. I do have a college degree in psych. Divorcing in Delaware.
Well, I think this person is right in looking for a real career, as you say, not just for financial reasons, but ethical reasons. It's also going to get old. Telemarketing gets old. That's not a career. That's an interim activity. And because this person didn't mention previous jobs, I'm assuming that none of those would be a useful springboard for a career that's going to pay middle-class livings. But here are some thoughts. This person has a degree in psychology. Here are some thoughts for people. She said she was people-centric. She has a degree in psychology. So I'm just going to throw out some careers that might titillate her enough to make her do the work. One is selling of psychological services. For example, Barb, you mentioned employee assistance companies. Those companies do provide counseling and support, and not always do they, you know, not all of it is provided by licensed psychologists, so she may be able to get a job like that. Then there are relationship coaches. That's not a very certified job. So, you know, she's finding out she's getting divorced, so she clearly, she recognized that a lot of relationships could use help, and she got the degree in psychology. She's very social. And just because your marriage didn't work out doesn't mean you couldn't help other people. In fact, your own experience may give you greater empathy for people in that situation. Human resources. You know, workplace stress is high. There's ever pressure to meet work goals and the challenges of an ever more diverse workforce. HR professionals attempt to help. HR is a very fast-growing field. Lawyer. A psychologically oriented person who likes to read might make a good lawyer, maybe even specializing in divorce law. Dental hygienist. Ron Kraft was talking about dental assistant. That's the launch pad job for dental hygiene, which pays really good money. And it is a social career. You get to do most of the talking because they got dental appliances in their mouth, so you get to talk as much as you want.
How about psych tech as a starting place?
Yeah, absolutely, is what I was saying. Apparently, I didn't realize there were that many jobs. If you're open to doing that kind of work, that's great. Teacher, of course, psychological-oriented people do well in teaching. Great benefits still. It's one of the few jobs. Barbara.
Well, the first place is substitute teacher, because all you need is a college degree, and we are desperate for substitute teachers, not just in Napa, anywhere. So I would start with that.
Okay. We're just about out of time, but do I have time for a quick call or no? Yes, let's go to the phones. Welcome to work. Now, of course, you all procrastinate. Wait till the last second. We only have time for one quick call. How can I help? Or we help? Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, can you hear me?
I hear you beautifully. Make it short.
That guy was that foundation executive got laid off so they could hire a younger person.
Right.
Does he have cause to sue for age discrimination?
Yeah, and it's always a rough call because they'll never say they wanted somebody with a different skill set. The fact that they hired a younger person, it's very hard to prove that it was the age or chronological age that was the causal factor. I'm going to thank you for the call. Do I have time for
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. All right. I do, as always, try to cram in as much as I can. So I want to thank Ron Kraft, president of Napa Valley College, Barbara Nemco, co-conspirator usually. I love you. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
40-year-old.
17, get it right.
And, of course, Joanne Marr and Damian Miner for being on the board here on Work with Martin Nemco. And, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will talk with Sun and Capital's Bob Goldstein on careers in socially responsible investing. And I'll offer my own look at the future of work and invite you to react. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco for Barbara Nemco, reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.